17 minutes past 8. Now, as part of Five Live's State of Mind season, we're looking at mental health of construction workers because bosses from across the UK are meeting in London today to talk about the issue. Official figures show that men working in the industry are amongst those at the greatest risk of suicide in England. And a survey for the recruitment firm Randstad suggests that a third of construction workers have experienced a mental health condition in the past year. Dave Lee has worked on building sites for more than 30 years and has experienced stress and depression. Morning to you, Dave.
Morning.
Now, you went in with a broom, I read, broom and a shovel, and you worked your way all the way up. So, pray see your story for us, if you would.
Okay, I had a troubled start in life, so I left jail at, well, I was in care, then I left jail at 21, and basically landed on a building site when I was 21, picked up a broom, worked my way up to a shovel, got promoted to a wheelbarrow, and then started to drive the machines. And then someone said to me, if you want to start to earn the money, start to read the drawings, which are the blueprints of the job, which I did. And that saw me go on to run multi-million pound jobs.
So you were the boss, effectively, in the end.
Yeah.
And that's stressful, isn't it? Because there's an awful lot of plates to spin, isn't there, on any construction site?
Yeah, you've got the materials, you've got the men, you've got the programme, you've got the weather, you've got the wife, you've got the kids, you've got the traffic. Yeah, there's a lot of things to manage, or field that you manage.
And clients to please all the time, that can't be easy when there's all so much randomness involved.
There's a lot of variables, yeah.
Yeah. How bad did it get for you then?
I wanted to commit suicide.
Tell us about that then.
Okay, yes. So as I progressed through the industry and, you know, and got a wife and a kids, a mortgage, and was, you know, to earn more money, I took on more pressure or took more responsibility. And as the pressures and the stresses increased, you know, I'm working in a fearful environment. You know, a lot of jobs are run on fear. So those above me didn't really have the man management skills to, you know, to articulate what they wanted. So, you know, the implications were that there was a lot of fear, and that implicated on my mental ill health, which I, you know, drunk heavily on to kind of ease the pressure within me. And that took me to a point 10 years ago that I was driving around a roundabout on the way to work, and I just couldn't do it no more. I just couldn't take the pressure no more, and I had a choice. I was either going to have to do something different or commit suicide. And I went home and I jumped into bed and just sent a text, couldn't even make a phone call, and just curled up. And then, but from that point, I kind of surrendered and I asked for help. So that, because in that moment of blackness, the only thing that kind of stopped me committing suicide is my six-year-old daughter at the time. I knew that she would need me when she was older. I thought my boy would be able to cope with life and my wife would be okay, but I thought my daughter would need me, and that thought stopped me committing suicide and enabled me to put my hand out and ask for help.
So that roundabout was a literal and also metaphorical turning point in your life.
Absolutely, and you can go round it. It's the one as you come into Brighton. But yeah, literally, yeah, and it was like, I didn't know where to go. I was just going round and round. I went around it about 3-4 times, and then I went back and just curled up in a black spot.
It's a very brave thing to do, to finally give in to that. How long had you been putting on this front and drinking and doing whatever else you were doing to sort of say, I'm okay?
I think because of my childhood and stuff like that, I think I'd been doing it most of my life, you know, because I didn't know there was another way of seeing things or doing things differently. So it was the way I coped. And many around me, you know, I see it in the industry. I wasn't alone. It's just that I had a gift of desperation and enabled me to ask for help. But there's a lot out there that kind of just cope with it, you know. It's like we cope with it because, especially in the industry being so transient, you know, we never know when the job's secure, we never know when the job's coming in. And that's kind of used against us, you know. It's like, well, if you don't like it, you can get lost. So there's that constant fear, you know. So, yeah, it was...
You know, fear is the heart of all of this, isn't it? The fear of being seen to be sort of less manly, the fear of, you know, being found out that you might actually have feelings that you don't really know how to cope with. How frightening was it to actually finally, you know, when you went back home and you got into bed and you thought, I have to be honest with myself and those around me? That's quite a frightening position to be in, isn't it?
It was, and, you know, the biggest fear I had at the time, and I can see now, was being vulnerable, you know, and saying, look, I don't know. Because don't forget, on the outside, I had it all. I had all the money, I had the four-wheel drive, the big house, you know, but inside, I was black. So It was actually being vulnerable and saying, look, I might have that on the outside, but inside, I'm emotionally dead, you know, and I need help. You know, and what I love about the industry now is there is a lot more conversations around this today. There's a lot of, you know, well-meaning programs out there. There's phone numbers. Around about the time that I was going through, what I went through, there was nothing, you know, really, unless you rung Samaritans or went to your doctors. And I'd been diagnosed with depression for 20 years, you know, and took antidepressants 20 years, but they never fixed what was going on inside me. It wasn't until I saw beyond what I thought I knew, created change, and that's what shifted in me. But it was that seeing there was no shame in asking for help, seeing there was no guilt in actually putting my hand out there and actually saying to someone, look, I need help, you know. And it was like a relief, if anything. It was, you know, it kind of enabled me to let go of all that, I know all the answers, I'm the boss, I'm the dad, you know. It's like, oh God, I'm just a scared man or a scared little boy that needs an hand, and that's what I did.
Well, you've said the unsayable this morning, and I know it will have helped very many people. You've also written the unwritable, if there's such a phrase, in your book, The Hairy Arsed Builder's Guide to Stress Management.
It's a great title, I've got to say.
I think we can say it once. We can say it once at this time of the morning. But listen, Dave, thank you so much for coming on Five Live Breakfast. That conference in London is on today about mental health in the construction industry.
I'm taking part in it.
Are you? Excellent.
Yes.
Report back. Let us know how it goes.
Mention your book loads of times, Dave.
Make sure you do when you take part in the conference, yeah.
But just quickly to say that as a builder, I discovered there's plenty of tools to make life easy on the outside. But what I discovered is plenty of tools to make life easy on the inside. And the great thing is no one knows you're using them, you know, but you feel better. So take a read.
Yeah, take a read and have a think. Dave Lee's his name. And Five Live State of Mind is a year-long season looking at mental health issues. If any of that rings a bell with you, details of organisations offering information and support are available here. All you have to do is go to bbc.co.uk/actionline, or you can call for free anytime to hear recorded information. This is the number to call, 08000 564 756. 08000 564 756.
It's 8:24. Good stuff. Very good night last night for the Home Nation.